Hello, you're listening to a podcast from oxinabox.co.uk with Catherine McAllister.
Hello, so I'm here with Raymond Blanc to discuss his new project and book, The Lost Orchard. Do you think it would be fair to say that this is a passion project of yours?
Very much so, and the passion is based on observations, on many on emotions, of course, but on many observations. And this book was written on three very separate experiences. The first was having a tasting apple with at the manoir, okay, a long time ago, about 7 years before the orchard was born, with her IHS, okay, with Sue Big, with the head of the IHS, and she wanted to make me taste apples from Broxdale, which is the biggest collection in Great Britain. I think it's about 8,500 varieties or something like that. Insane, okay. And I did a tasting of apple with an amazing man called William Sibley, who is one of the great grafter and was a part of a science department, which is the East Malling Science Department, which actually, and nobody knows it in England,
it's fascinating,
is a provider of most of the rootstock in the whole of Europe, okay, 80%.
Wow.
And that nobody knows that.
No.
For example,
yeah.
I'll tell you a lovely example. I was doing a TV program, actually it was Q on the Plate at the time, and I wanted to talk about East Malling and their research center of these amazing engineers, scientists who work at creating new varieties of fruits. And they are poetic and they are dreamers, and they're also very, they are into chemistry as well, and how to merge and crossbred apples or fruits or. And there on that day, I was in a strawberry field of 6,000 varieties.
Wow.
And these engineers and these scientists were trying, and they were amazing, these strawberries, because I ate about 300, okay, and they were, some were yellow, some were purple, some were green, some, you know, all the different color. The tastes were moving from woodland to acid, to sour, to sage color, to no sugar, to high sugar level. It was, you know, pineapple, all sort of extraordinary. It was really unreal and fantastic. And these engineers were really actually looking for creating strawberries so that strawberry has got the best flavor, because taste is becoming again important. Low sugar, which is at the moment we have worked for high sugar, and there's now a reverse at the moment happening. They were looking for, of course, a minimum water, because water is going to be the biggest problem we're going to face within these next 10 years. Okay, because aquifers are lowering down and lowering down. Okay, there's a lot of pollution as well going on. Okay, so water is going to become a mega issue. Talk to Professor Lang, Tim Lang, about it, because he's the only food professor in Great Britain, an amazing man with a great friend as well. So, and of course, they're looking for a variety of strawberry or apple or whatever, which is resistant to any known disease, which produces a great deal, which has uniformity, etc., etc. But it's an amazing place and nobody knows about it, and they create most of the extraordinary fruit, okay, in Europe.
So he caught you, did he? He inspired you, or
yes.
You were already passionate about it?
But I was already passionate about fruit, because that's my background, because I come from a background, a working class background, and my papa built his own house with his own hands, okay, and the garden was the most important part of it, because the garden would provide about 80% of the food we would eat. So I worked in the garden at an early age, had a deep connection with the earth, with varieties. When my mom asked me to get some fruits in the garden, she would go for a variety, or potatoes, she would go for a variety, and the potato, for example, for sauté would be grenaille, or it would be a little rat. For pan frying, it would be, or deep frying, it would be maris pepper, or binge for puree. So everything had a variety. So I knew all about these as a kid. Then, of course, and the hardship of gardening, because I was the commie of my papa, the minion of my mom. Okay, what I mean by that is that we will help my father in doing the garden, removing the grass, removing the stone, watering the plant. And when you thought it was all over, you find out actually you had to harvest all these things and ton of beans to top and tail. Oh my God, once my friends were playing football.
Yeah.
And so effectively I had a deep knowledge of food acquired in my own education. Oh. I had to work for my bread, so to speak. And actually, interestingly enough, I wouldn't be able to help myself with bread. And although my father was a communist atheist, that means he hated God, he would take the big loaf of bread, and when the five kids were around the table, and only him would serve the bread. And he would put a cross. So one day I couldn't help him. Papa, you hate God. How can you put a cross? Okay. He said to me, it was a way to find respect, okay, for this huge important food staple. Okay, so, and when you're big enough, you'll be able to serve yourself with bread. But until 14, I was not able to. But anyway, so deep knowledge. And then the table, this medium, okay, where the family would gather around the table, the argument, you know, the love, the laughter, the togetherness of a, and that table was the most powerful medium, okay, where you met every day. And we ate this wonderful food, okay, which was bottled, which was dried, which was layered. I remember the cellar very well, because the cellar had the same footprint as the house. And you entered this cellar, it was amazing. As a kid, I would stand sometimes long, long period of time. It was like an extraordinary still life, because you had one single bulb, okay, a light which would diffuse a very tiny little bit of light, so not to make sure that the potatoes wouldn't germinate and so on. And then when you are accustomed to the obscurity, you are hit first by the smells. This incredible musty, because it was the earth, beaten earth, you know, base. And then on which the carrots, the potatoes, the navet, the chicory, all would be laid, okay, the beetroot would be laid. I mean, about 100 kilograms of each,
wow,
you know, to feed that family.
Yeah.
You know, and then you had on the layer, top layers, you had all the preserves, okay, the food, the preserves into all sort of different shape, and you could see the outline through the darkness, you know. And then on the side, you had, so talking about hundreds and hundreds, so of fruit we collected in the forest, okay, of vegetables and from the garden, okay, because I was already a hunter-gatherer from the age of 7. And my county, Franche-Comté, is the most forested part of Europe. Okay, and then there would be always a big barrel of wine, which would be leaking, you know, a little bit, drop by drop. So yes, it's an extraordinary sensory experience, and it was so beautiful.
So you grew up with
pears, absolutely. So completely invested, and my France, that part of France, a very rural peasant area. So yes, I grew, I must say, up to the age of 40. That was my playground.
Mm.
That was my playground. There was no television. There was very little television. There was my mom didn't have a television until I was about 15.
She didn't have
15.
Time, did she?
No, no, we didn't have the money as well. We're not rich working class.
Yeah.
We're poor working class. Big
difference. Yeah. I love the way she features in this. I mean, there's the maman blanc tart, isn't there?
Yeah.
And there's an amazing recipe with baked apples with caramel sauce.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That sounds absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it is lovely, yes, and you must do it. And you don't even, see, what I do is to remove the core, but you don't have to. You can do it whole, just like that. Just with a little incision around the apple so the steam can escape so it doesn't explode. The apple doesn't explode in the oven.
Yeah.
Of course, the variety is important, you know, and what I've done in this little book, okay, here, this lovely little book, is to write basically the varieties of apple who are the best, you know, the kind of apple you want is the one which is best for everything, which is rare. And the Cox Orange Pippin, this extraordinary apple, is for me the world best apple that I've ever tasted, be it in France or anywhere, any country I've And I've eaten a lot of apples.
You have eaten a lot of apples
and fruit, yes. Well, yeah. Yes, because, yes, the Devonshire Quarrenden Extraordinary, which dates back to 1678, the Cook's Orange in 1825, the Cheddar Cross, again, 1916, is quite a relatively new, which is it's a red star Devon.
That one surprised you, didn't it? You didn't think, when you saw the name, I think, that you didn't think
I love cheddar, but I think of cheese when I think about cheddar, you know. But the Cheddar Cross surprised me because this apple is gorgeous, it's quite a sizable apple, okay, and it baked beautifully. It's a wonderful dessert apple. It does some fantastic Maman Blanc tarte, tarte tatin, it does everything. And of course, the sad thing is that none of these apples are the Queen Cokes. And the Devonshire Quarrenden, all the apples, you don't find them in any of our supermarkets.
So, do we go back a bit to the beginning?
Yeah, maybe we should, yes. Sorry, I'm going to lose you everywhere.
One of my favourite stories of yours is when you were coming over on the ferry and you ate your first English meal, which was fish and chips, and you realised how much work there was to be done.
Yeah.
It struck me, and you've put on the cover, a French chef rediscovers a great British food heritage. Why it's taken you to do this and highlight this and ignite in us a passion for replanting and rediscovering our own.
I think there's much to do in this country. I think I came in way back in 1972 in Great Britain, and this country, obviously France, it was in a hole. Great Britain was in a bottomless abyss. We had hombres fast food, and agriculture which was based on intensive farming followed by heavy processing, both using heavy loads of the nastiest possible chemicals and preservatives and colorings and everything, okay? So then then these fruit or vegetables, after being grown intensively and then processed with about 1,000 chemicals that you could add to these vegetables. That's why we have so many allergies today and so much ill health. It's definitely connected with that, plus of course the pollution around us. Then after, once these fruits were grown and our vegetables were grown and processed, then the marketer would come along, and we you know, it was all about the looks, how it looks, and that's why this food is so insidious, because it looks beautiful. It is made to look beautiful. It's all about the outside and not the inside, and we have completely lost as consumers we need to buy now from inside. Yes, it's important that a vegetable or food must be attractive, but also it's also so it needs to be also delicious. And so then that will be followed by heavy marketing, heavy branding, and we reduce free food to a mere commodity which only values and virtues are cheapness. And we buy on price and on looks. And I understand, okay, there's food is expensive, but rather than buy a bad egg, which is intensively produced, please buy a good egg. And I received a good egg award 2 years ago. So
Yeah.
And I think we need to really, I think it's worth to eat. I think we need to reinvent everything, basically. First, why, the first question is why, you know, we import 80% of our food in Great Britain, which is complete, I don't understand. We should actually at least grow 60 or 70% of it. 60% of our orchards don't exist anymore. So all these beautiful orchards, which used to be associated and connected with villages and communities, they have disappeared. And I remember what made me do this orchard, which took me 7 years of work, with of course amazing friends, because you need a great professional to support you. And then as great professional, I had David Pennell, okay, who was the former director of Brookdale Garden. Then IHS Brookdale Garden. I had William Sibley, who was associated with East Morning, With his research center, which is amazing. Then I had Barry Juniper, who's a wonderful professor who wrote the Book of Apple, and wonderfully more exuberant than me. I'm calm, a Frenchman, compared to him. So he's one of these professors who was delightful and has helped me a lot and brought me, I remember, he had a mini orchard behind the house of a friend, okay, which is called Michael Stewart, okay, which is who has that beautiful, how do you call that, this... a beautiful house, big house, and behind this is old orchard, badly kept, but which grow some very rare apples such as Grenadier, Courpendu, and so many other old British variety. That's why I met this wonderful man, Barry Juniper, who really completely enlightened me more. Okay, that was one of the reasons. Then the other reason is I went to the TV program. And on Pear Show in Aversham, okay, I think it's in Worcestershire. Okay, if I get it right. Because I'm not very good at gym. I'm not very good at my match, actually. And it was in Worcestershire, and I saw a cataclysm. I saw a symmetry of thousands of trees. Of plums, so yellow pear plums, yellow Peugeot plums, Victoria plums, apples, pears, unpicked, all decimated on the floor. Mm.
Which has happened this year with apples, hasn't it?
That's happening every year.
Yeah.
So that really, I couldn't understand, so I did the research. And the research basically pointed at a number of big changes in Great Britain, that some of the variety were growing were not the best. They were also not best for our weather, not very resistant, because the problem that in Great Britain is water, humidity. Humidity is a breeder of disease, okay? So that was a little problem to sort out. And equally, the cheer competition of countries like South Africa, New Zealand, now China, definitely France has always been in it, but at least we close by, okay? And it decimated his orchard, okay?
So sad.
It is really a sad story, and...
your travels, just reading it is joyful, because you obviously, you know, you'd get in a plane and you'd go and find some rare apple somewhere in France. And
I'm a bit over the top.
But you sounded, or the way you wrote it, it was just wonderful.
Oh, yes, it was. So that's the second reason why I did this orchard. First, the tasting with the RHS, then, and the Bogdale people, then the filming this orchard, which was decimated, which was a symmetry of apples or plums. And the third thing is when I went to see in Versailles the Jardin du Roi, and I fell in love completely with the vegetables formations, the varietals involved, and these palmette espalier columns. Absolutely, and how it was on the wall, and I completely fell in love with the Jardin du Roi, and immediately those three things came together. That's it. It was imperative that I should do. There was an amazing force, you know, which had we need to create our own orchard at Belmont Manor, I can say that.
Well, you said in the book that you had to fight for your orchard.
Of course, because creating an orchard requires first knowledge, requires professionals to support you. Professional cost money. It requires investing money that costs more than £300,000, because you have to go through all sorts of steps. First, you have to look at the position of the orchard, which kind of crosswind comes along. We have a little hill just above the orchard which is carrying the frost, where the frost runs down right the orchard, so you have to create edges and to stop these wave of frost coming in, plant fruit edges to prevent the wind attacking fierce woods is orchard. So I had to have hedge fund person, not a hedge fund, hedge the chairman of the Edge in Great Britain, of Fruit Edges in Great Britain, who headed exactly as per the 16th century our Fruit Edge.
Wow.
Okay, wonderful man. I was surrounded, so I had David Pennell from Rochdale, okay, then I had William Sibley, I had
Mark. But also,
so I was surrounded with really top people. I wanted to bring a bit of Frenchness within this great British heritage, okay, so I grow all my fruits on a palmette, espalier, double palmette. Etc. So there's an architecture which is very beautiful, but it's not just for beauty. The espalier, when you enter the restaurant, I ask an artist to do a beautiful espalier on glass. It took about a year to do, okay, which was connected already with the orchard that I would do eventually.
Talking about how hard you had to fight for the orchard, and I loved your description of Amory, your head gardener's face when you told her you wanted.
Of course.
And you said she just had this secret smile that knew what was ahead, but
absolutely,
was quite excited.
Yes, because she's
at the
used
same
to
time.
It. But I always, I love gardens, okay, and gardens, I would say, even gardens are the very heart of Le Manoir. It's a foundation of my gastronomy, it's a very canvas on which I express all the seasonality and the bounty of the very rare varieties which are grown in the very best soil, with the best gardeners, with the best love, okay, and whether it is fruit, the orchard now, we have about 50 tons of fruits, okay. Today was a massacre, it was really a bad year this year for most people, and for us it was as well. And equally,
because
all sort of reasons. We were very busy elsewhere. There was a very hot up to March, April. It was quite warm, and then suddenly, the flower was already up, and there was a big wave of frost, less four, less 5 degrees, icy winds. Very powerful wind, hail as well, everything came together. Mm. I would never want to be in agriculture because you depend so much on the weather.
Yeah.
Suddenly your harvest can be one-tenth
by
this natural cataclysm which you cannot control.
Yeah.
So you have to fight against all that. Okay? And this year was not a very good harvest because of this reason equally. And that's a big one. Organic soil association, use still a level of sulfates and copper. Admittedly, about 20 times less than all other intensive orchards, but I wanted to have a zero chemical, okay, so no fertilizers, no herbicides, which the soil association doesn't have, but they're still using sulfate and copper, and I didn't want that. So I wanted to create a completely biodynamic orchard.
Did you get another secret smile when you told her that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Everyone smiled. Not just me, but me when I have something in my mind. I'm a purist in a way, and that sometimes you receive a great lesson of humility, because sometimes you cannot fight against certain, certainly not the weather, okay? You cannot fight against that. And to create a totally biodynamic orchard was really a bit unrealistic.
Right.
And for 6 years I tried, and there were some good years, but at the end of the day, I'm going to revert with the soil association, and we are working together at at looking at biodynamic and other organic orchards and vineyards in England, and especially the biodynamic vineyards, which tisane do they use to spray? You must understand that at the moment, an intensive orchard will use maybe 50 spray, herbicides, pesticides, germicide, the whole lot. Sure, you will have no disease, zero disease, okay? And you'll have a big yield. But you have high residue, okay, as well, and now the science is able to really. So the food we eat in Great Britain is full of that, okay. So that's another big, big, big issue we need to look into, okay. Which brings me actually to the big problem we have in Great Britain, and that's and I would love to do a little campaign with the IHS, okay? First, on grow your own tree, because all what you need is you need a little wall outside of your house. You don't need to have a big house, you know. You just need 70 centimeter or 80 centimeter to bring a little palmate tree, whether apricot or peach, you know, or pear, or your favorite pear. This little book will give you all the very best varieties. And then if you work with your local nursery, choose the best one, or Boxdale, because they're so equipped for it, and they are the best in Great Britain. They will prepare the tree for you, they will shape it up, they'll give you a recipe as well how to look after it, which is wonderful to be able to grow your own fruit, you know. Because I like the espalier. Why do we do espalier? I think it was created in the 17th
century. For anyone who doesn't know what espalier is.
Yes, espalier is. It's a form. I'll show you what espalier is. And I'll show you.
It's a way of leading a tree up.
Well, first, the espalier is not a... Most trees in Great Britain are balls. You know, it's a big... Yeah. big. And in here, you've got a lot of waste because it's... The inside is harboring disease because it keeps humidity, okay? And that's why disease thrive, okay? And only the outside foods are really perfect. So you lose a lot plastically to get them to harvest them is very difficult because you've got to go on ladders and whereas the espalier doesn't grow more than 2 meters. Equally, it is go in a linear way. It's got so 1, 2, 3, 4 branches or 5 maximum. Okay, which spread on both sides and are shaped up so into a U shape. Okay, and then effectively the wind is able to dry very easily the fruit and the leaves, so there's minimum disease. Equally, the fruit has got the benefit of all the sun from morning to night, so there's a better ripening process, and again less disease because the warmth and the light are very important to an orchard. So you harbor maximum lights and warmth from the sun.
Okay.
Plus it is beautiful.
Oh.
And that's what got me first.
Yeah.
Okay, the beauty of the Jardin du Roi in Versailles. Okay. So the same for the palmette, double palmette, and so on. Okay, and column. So they're all things which are easy. And you have got bigger food because you have maybe 20% less fruit, but they are in better health as well. And less susceptible to go through disease, because as you know, there are hundreds of diseases. There's so many enemies of a garden or an orchard. Okay, so what really, and of course, I must thank first all the friends who have helped me, and of course Anne-Marie most of all. Okay, my lovely Anne-Marie, who always suffers with my mad projects constantly. There's 12 gardens here, and each of them, and there will be 16 within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, because we are finishing a bee village, an extraordinary bee village. Okay, which should be a fantasy. Okay, where you'll have the queen castle. Okay, living in a castle. Okay, and all the workers will have their little house, 12 of them. Okay, and they're all designed by a friend artist, Ian Palmer, with an Irish artist, amazing man who's done so much of our work, with of course organic paint, okay, water paint as well, and every house will have a proper structure with doors and really a fantasy, all different expressing all the counties. Which produce fruits, okay, in Great Britain will be here in France as well. Okay, so you'll have little cottagey hives, you'll have some some from Kent or Sussex or Scotland.
So a sort of horticultural version of Lego.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have your little pathway leading to the Queen's Village, and it will be full of lavender and rockeries and so on.
This is your idea.
But I'm a child, okay, so I've always been childlike, and I like to put always a smile on the face of what we do, okay. So then we'll have our own chicken, okay. The chicken I've chosen are the Moron varieties, a French variety. They're beautiful hens, big hens. okay, with a dark grey plumage with tiny little white speckles. Mm. And of course, I bring in a few English cockerels inside.
That's kind of you.
English, because there's still a little bit of England into it. And of course, then produce. And these chicken, which will be about 200, which is going to come in April, will do a number of jobs. They'll bring nitrogen into the soil, okay. They'll pick up aphids as well from the trees. Plus, they provide, of course, eggs for our breakfast for all of our guests. And then, of course, when they have their life cycle, I'm a Frenchman and I have a very healthy relationship with food. Well, we'll have the poulet au pot, okay, and yeah. enjoy a wonderful nutritive meal. So it's a full cycle, you know, so whatever we do is completely, we create a responsible luxury, always. The manoir is the heart of that. We are the very first to do it, okay, and to minimize completely waste. Part of this orchard, there's three orchards actually in here. There's one orchard for taste, that means I tasted all of these fruits.
Wow.
Juiced, raw, baked.
How many is that?
Is that
about 120.
So it took me about just a month to the team of eight, because the gardeners always work in the kitchen now. The kitchen work in the garden, so they understand each other's headache and, you know, and skill, okay. So going through this full tasting, okay, of apples, you know, in, and cooked in all sort of different ways. So, yes, it's I would hate it, okay. But I don't mind, because now we have something special.
Yeah.
We'll tribute both to French and English, and of course I love to celebrate the Entente Cordiale, that's why I've done that French orchard, that English orchard, and that orchard for taste. So it's three orchards within one, French, British, Heritage, which tells a huge story about Great Britain, about this wonderful orchard we use to colour our villages and our communities. And the heart of it as well is Orchard for Taste, all the best, the one fruit which are the best for poaching, the best for canning, the best for preserving, the best for drying, the best for slicing and drying, you know, etc. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. And you know what? The British have lost a great deal of their connection with their orchard. In England, you have cooking apple and eating apple.
Yeah.
And I said, no. There's eating apple, the best for eating. There's the best. Cooking must be broken down in number. The best for juice, the best, that means juice, why? It needs acidity, so it doesn't oxidize quickly. Okay, not too much sugar either. It needs a balance, you know. Use all of the skin as well. Okay, so there are apples which are dedicated for that. Some of this is for baking whole, so it doesn't explode or doesn't, you know. And the best baking experience, best baked apple. So you have all these, you know, and we need to really get that knowledge, because it's a lovely knowledge. But maybe I'm a dreamer. Maybe expecting a bit too much from everyone. Yes, it's been a labor of love, and a few lessons of humility on the way.
You've been listening to a podcast from oxinabox.co.uk with Catherine McAllister. Read more at oxinabox.co.uk.